For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is March the 7th, and we're in Parshas Pinchas on page 890. We're up to the bottom of the page, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, and now we're going to get into the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. We had Shabbos, we had the Karban Tamid, then we had Shabbos, and now we have the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. Uvrashei Chodeshem, and on your Roshei Chodeshem, the first of your months, Takrivu Olala Hashem, you should bring a burnt offering to Hashem. What should you bring? So we're going to have a whole package here. Parim Bnei Vakar Shnayim, you should bring two bulls, Va'ayel Echad, and one ram, Kvasim Bnei Shana, Shiva Timimim, and 7-year-old sheep. 1-year-old sheep that are Timimim, that are without blemish. So it is two bulls, one ram, 7 sheep, a total of 10 animals. Of course, this does not include the Karban HaTamid, the 2 sheep that are being brought anyway for the Tamid, which we'll see in a moment. Now, what do you bring along with these animals? Ushlosha Esronim Soles Mincha, you should bring 3 Esronim of fine flour as a meal offering. Bilulav HaShemen, which is mixed with oil, La Par HaEchad, for each of the bulls. Ushnei Esronim Soles Mincha, Bilulav HaShemen La'ayah HaEchad. And 2 Esronim of fine flour as a meal offering, mixed with oil, for each ram. Now, there's only 1 ram being offered over here, but anytime you bring a ram, it would get 2 Esronim of flour. V'Yisaron Yisaron, and 1 Yisaron per animal. Soles Mincha B'lulav HaShemen, of fine flour as a meal offering that's mixed with oil. La Keves HaEchad, for each of the sheep. Ola re'ach nichoach, it is a burnt offering which is a pleasant smell. Ishela Hashem, a burnt offering for Hashem. So again, just to give a sense for how much we're talking about, we mentioned last time that an isaron is the amount of flour that you would need in order to have to take off challah with a bracha. So 1 isaron for each sheep, 2 esronim for a ram, 3 esronim for a bull. V'niskehem, and their libations, chatzi ha-hin yela par, half of a hin for each bull, ushlishis ha-hin lo'ayel, and 1/3 of a hin for each ram, urvi'is ha-hin la-keves yayin, and 1/4 of a hin for each sheep, that's the amount of wine you bring. We mentioned last time that a hin has 12 lug, and the amount you need for Kiddush is a revius, is 1/4 of a lug. So the smallest amount here is a revius ahin, that's 1/4 of a hin for a sheep, that's 3 lug, 1/4 of 12 is 3. So that would be 12 Kiddush cups worth of wine. That's the smallest amount. For each ram, you need 1/3 of a hin, which is 4 lug, which would be 16 Kiddush cups of wine. And for each bull, you need half a hin is 6 lug, so that would be 24 Kiddush cups of wine. And when I say Kiddush cup, I mean the minimum size Kiddush cup. Most Kiddush cups are bigger than the minimum size. So it's not quite as big as we're picturing, 24 huge cups, but 24 nice size cups of Kiddush wine. Zos olas chodesh bechadsho, this is the burnt offering of each Rosh Chodesh in its Chodesh, which means you have to bring the right one for its day. If you missed a Rosh Chodesh, you can't bring it the next Rosh Chodesh. It's got to be done on that particular Rosh Chodesh. L'chadshei HaShanah, for all the months of the year. And in addition to these 10 animals, so we have 2 bulls, 1 ram, 7 sheep, but you also have to bring a goat. U'siri zimechad l'chatas. LaHashem. And you also have to bring one goat as a sin offering to Hashem. Alolas ha-tamid ye'asev nisko. All of this needs to be brought in addition to the burnt offering, the ola of the tamid, the one that's brought every day. In addition to it, meaning after it, first you bring the ola of the tamid, then you offer the musafim, then you offer these extra karbanos. That's which we've done. Vinisko, and its libations. Its libations refers to the musaf offerings. They get libations, as we explained. The chatas, the sin offering, doesn't get any libations. So it's not referring to the sin offering when it mentions the libations, nisko. So those are the additional karbanos that are offered because it is Rosh Chodesh. So on Rosh Chodesh, you would offer that you'd start with the one sheep as the carbon tamid, then you'd offer these other 11 animals, and then later in the day, towards the end of the day, you'd offer the last of the carbon tamid, which is another sheep. If it was Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, then you have the sheep of the morning, and then you have the two sheep, which are the musaf of Shabbos, then you have the 11 animals that are the musaf of Rosh Chodesh, and then you have the sheep of the tamid of the afternoon. And that's the way you keep doing it. The more types of days that come together, the more animals that are going to have to be offered because you have to satisfy each type of musaf. This sin offering, we will see, is repeated in each of the Amim Tovim. Pesach is going to have a chatas, a sin offering, as will Shavuos, as will Sukkot, as will Rosh Hashanah, as will Yom Kippur. The sin offering that is brought, what sin is it brought for? So far we've been talking about burnt offerings and Ola. So an Ola is offered on every day, twice a day, and then Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, and that's all the Musafim. What is this sin offering? Who did a sin for which we have to bring a sin offering? So the Gemara explains that the sin offerings, the chatos, that are brought with the carbon musaf of every day that requires musaf, all the holidays that require musaf, is for tumas mikdash vikadashav. That is for the tuma, the impurity that may have infiltrated the Beis HaMikdash, which means a person is not allowed to bring a tame item to the Beis HaMikdash. If one does on purpose, then that's a sin, like any other sin. Karbanos don't generally atone for a purposeful sin. Karbanos generally atone for a sin that's done bishogeg, with negligence. Without knowledge, but negligent. Meaning, it wasn't an act of God, it's something that could have been avoided, but it was negligence. But the person didn't do it on purpose. So the chatas here, chatos, all these sin offerings, are to atone for the being negligent and bringing something which is tameh to the Beis HaMikdash. So the way that works is a person brought something that was, they realized it was tameh, they forgot about it, and they brought it, and then afterwards they remembered, oh no, it was tameh. So it's too late, it was already brought. So that would need atonement. So the karban would atone for that type of situation where the person eventually did discover that they brought something tamei. They didn't mean to, but in the end they did, and they realized it. So the karban will atone for that. That's true of all of the karbanos, that it says that you, with all of the musafim, that you offer a karban chatas, a sin offering, along with the ola. The ola is generally a package of a bunch of karbanos, and then you have the chatas, the sin offering that comes along with it. On Rosh Chodesh, though, it says in the last pasuk, the last verse, lichatas laHashem, a sin offering to Hashem. All the other ones, we haven't had any yet, so we can't compare them yet, but as we will see in the ensuing paragraphs, they all say you should bring a chatas. They don't say a chatas to Hashem. Here, this extra word, la Hashem, needs to be understood. Let me just give you an example so you can compare it, even though we haven't done it yet. Just jump ahead, please, to Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22, which is the same formula and the same carbon that is brought on Pesach. It says, Usir Chatas Echad, and a goat, one goat, which is a sin offering, L'chaper Aleichem, to atone for you. Here it says, a sin offering for Hashem. So why does it say for Hashem? So the Gemara tells us the simple meaning is, it's to include situations where no one ever found out that the Tamei item was brought to the Beis HaMikdash. That only Hashem knows. So how do we get atonement for that? No one ever knows in order to offer an atonement, because you don't know, you have to know about it in order to ask forgiveness. So here somebody accidentally included something Tamei in the Beis HaMikdash. And now what? How do we know? We don't even know about it afterwards to ask for atonement. So the Karban Chatas of Rosh Chodesh atones even for that which was not known by anyone. Only Hashem knows about it. Even that will be atoned for with the sin offering of Rosh Chodesh. Whereas the Chatas of the other Yamim Tovim will only atone for those situations where the person eventually finds out about it and knows that they did the sin. That is the simple, straightforward answer to why it says LaHashem. There is a much deeper answer, which we will cover in a moment, Be'ezras Hashem. First, I want to digress into another point, which is somewhat of a technical point, but it may answer a question that you may have had if you have ever been in shul for the Kriyas HaTorah for Rosh Chodesh. The Kriyas HaTorah for Rosh Chodesh is, of course, this paragraph. This is the paragraph of Rosh Chodesh. When Rosh Chodesh comes out on Shabbos, so then the Mafter is reading, we read, the previous paragraph, which is the paragraph about Shabbos, about the Musaf of Shabbos. It's a very short paragraph. And this paragraph about Rosh Chodesh. Those two paragraphs are lumped together into one aliyah, and it is the Mafter of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. It happens to be that the last time we had Shabbos Rosh Chodesh was Parshas Shkolim, and then we didn't do this because there the Mafter was Shkolim. But throughout the rest of the year, if Shabbos comes out on Rosh Chodesh, then the Mafter is this over here, is the paragraph of Shabbos and the paragraph of Rosh Chodesh. If Rosh Chodesh comes out during the week, which is when it normally comes out, then the reading of Rosh Chodesh is these three paragraphs. It's the paragraph of the Karban Tamid. That's the paragraph that begins chapter 28. Then it's the paragraph of Shabbos, and then it's the paragraph of Rosh Chodesh. Three paragraphs that we read on a regular weekday Rosh Chodesh. That's the reading. Now we know from the Gemara in Maseches Megillah that on Rosh Chodesh there are to be four aliyos. You call four people to the Torah and you read these three paragraphs, which leads to the necessity to break up the paragraphs in a way that you can call four different aliyos. There are ground rules for an aliyah. An aliyah must be a minimum of three psukim, three verses. You cannot have an aliyah that is less than three psukim. Number one. Number two, you can't begin reading any paragraph and stop before you've read three psukim. You have to read at least three psukim into a paragraph. Why isn't that redundant with what I just said? I just said you need three psukim. But here's where that would come into play. Let's say you started reading from Pasuk Tes from verse 9. Uviyom HaShabbos. Let's say you started reading there. Now that paragraph is only two psukim. Well, maybe I could read that paragraph plus one more. Plus the first pasuk, the first verse, and the next paragraph. So I would read as my aliyah, Tes, Yud, and Yud Aleph. 9, 10, and 11. But you can't do that, because you can't stop one pasuk into the next paragraph. Once you start the next paragraph, you got to read at least three in the next paragraph. So that means that this paragraph of Shabbos has to be appended either to the previous paragraph or the following paragraph. You also can't end with less than three psukim left in the paragraph. So therefore, you can't also make an aliyah out of psukim ches, tes, and yod, 8, 9, and 10, because if you're going to start with pasuk ches, verse 8, that means you stopped the previous aliyah with only one pasuk left in the paragraph. Can't do that. So therefore, breaking up these paragraphs here actually are pretty challenging, because the first paragraph, the one with the carbon tamid, has 8 psukim. The next one has 2 psukim, and the next one has 5 psukim. 8, 2, and 5. Well, if you think about it, the 5 pasuk paragraph cannot be broken up, because wherever you break it up, you'll end up with either having read less than 3 psukim in that paragraph, or you'll leave over less than 3 psukim in that paragraph. So you have to keep that entire paragraph as one. The Shabbos paragraph, the 2 pasuk paragraph, can't stand on its own. You got to attach that to one of the 2 paragraphs. That means that the 8 pasuk paragraph has to be broken up into 3 aliyahs, because you have to have 4 aliyahs on Rosh Chodesh. The last paragraph is one of them. So that means the 8 pasuk paragraph has to be 3, but you can't break it into 3 because there's only 8 psukim. You need a minimum of 9 psukim to have 3 aliyahs, because you have to have 3 psukim per person. So we're really stuck. The Gemara actually struggles with this. What do you do on Rosh Chodesh? That is why you may have noticed that on a weekday Rosh Chodesh, we repeat a pasuk. What happens is they give the first aliyah, the Kohen, gets the first 3 psukim of the first paragraph. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, 1, 2, and 3. The next aliyah, the Levi, does not start from Pasuk Dalet, from verse 4. Rather, the Baal Kriya goes back and reads Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, again. And he reads psukim Gimel, Dalet, Hey, 3, 4, and 5 for the Levi. Then the Yisrael gets the last 3 psukim of that paragraph plus the 2 psukim of Shabbos. And then the 4th aliyah gets the 5 psukim of the 3rd paragraph. So therefore, Pasuk Gimel verse 3, which is, V'amarta lahem zeh ha'yishe ashat hakrivu la'Hashem, you shall say to them, this is the fire offering that you should offer to Hashem, kimosim b'nei shanot timimim, the sheep that are a year old, that are without blemish, shnayim layom, 2 per day, ola, samid, and ola, consistently. That pasuk gimel, verse 3, is repeated every Rosh Chodesh. So it's read twice on every Rosh Chodesh, except when it comes out on Shabbos. If it comes out during the week, it's repeated. Rosh Chodesh comes out, we know, either once or twice per month, which means that throughout the course of the year, you have roughly... You have roughly 18 Rosh Chodesh days. Approximately 18 Rosh Chodesh days. Some of them come out on Shabbos. But some of them are during the week. When they're during the week, this pasuk is repeated. Which makes this pasuk Gimel, in Perek Chav Ches, chapter 28, verse 3, in Parashas Pinchas, the most often read pasuk in the Torah during Kriyas HaTorah. So as a trivia question, if anybody asks you which pasuk is read the most, this is it. Because it gets repeated on Rosh Chodesh whenever Rosh Chodesh is during the week. Now, I would not say that it's the pasuk that is quoted the most. The pasuk Shema Yisrael is said several times in davening, especially on Shabbos. And there are other pasukim as well that are said more often. But in terms of the reading of the Torah in Shul, this is the pasuk that is read the most for this reason, because of this technicality of how to fit in all those aliyahs. Yeah?
How come Shabbos, the paragraph for Shabbos, is read when Rosh Chodesh falls during the week?
Good. So that's a good question. The question is, why is the paragraph for Shabbos read when Rosh Chodesh comes during the week? So really, we have no reason to read it when it comes during the week. On Shabbos, we read it because anyway, it's on Shabbos, right? We read it during the week because we want to get in the previous paragraph, the paragraph of the Tumid, as well. So we're not going to skip in the middle, we include that. What the Shulchan Aruch asks is, why don't we read the two Pesukim of Shabbos every Shabbos? If we read the Pasuk of Rosh Chodesh, right, why don't we read the Shabbos Pesukim every Shabbos? So there's different answers given. One of them is because it's only two Pesukim. So we can't read it by itself. So that's one of the reasons. But that is discussed. Why don't we read that every single Shabbos? Yeah.
How come it says on your new moons, and on the others it says like on the Sabbath day, on the 15th, or on the first, in the first month, on the 14th day? Why does it?
Yours. You want the possessive. Why does it your new moons?
Right.
That's a good question. That's a good question. It's probably, I didn't think of it. It's probably because we're the ones who sanctify the new moon. Shabbos is automatic. Whether we sanctify it or not, it happens by itself. But we are responsible to proclaim the new moon.
And all the Chagim, we aren't.
Well, the Chagim then come on the heels of right, of Rosh Chodesh. But Rosh Chodesh is where it starts. We proclaim Rosh Chodesh and then everything else comes from there. Uh-huh. That's a good observation. I didn't think of that. Going back to the last Pasuk in this paragraph, on 892, Pasuk Tes Vav 15, this sin offering where it says L'chatas LaHashem as a sin offering for Hashem. The Medrash tells us that this actually means that we are going to offer a sin offering for Hashem, so to speak, kiviyachol, for a sin that Hashem did. Now, clearly that's impossible. Hashem can't sin. So what does that mean? So what does the Medrash actually say? It's quoted here a little bit, and it's we mentioned it in several places, but it's a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, Adaf Samach Mabez 60b is where you can find it. And there the Gemara says as follows. When Hashem created the sun and the moon, back in Parshas Bereshis, back in the very beginning, in the first 6 days of creation, on the fourth day of creation, it says that Hashem created as Shnei Hameoros HaGidolim, the two large Meoros. A Meor is that which gives light. The two large bodies that give light. And then it says, Es HaMa'or HaGadol LeMemsheles HaYom, the big light for ruling during the day. Ves HaMa'or HaKaton LeMemsheles HaLayla, and the small light to rule at night. So it's contradictory. First it says Hashem created the two big lights. Then it says the big light during the day, the small light at night. Well, which one is it? Are they both big? Or is one big and one small? So you can answer this without resorting to the Medrash. It has been pointed out, this is already in secular sources you can find this, that is a curiosity that from the perspective of man standing on planet Earth, if you could look at the sun, which we can't do, but if you look at it and measure the ball of the sun from our perspective, and measure the ball of the moon from our perspective, they measure exactly the same. From where we stand, whatever the distances are, obviously the sun is much further away than the moon, but from our perspective, they measure the same size. So in terms of size, they really are both big. They're bigger than any other light in the sky. They're far bigger than any planet or any star that you can see in the sky, and they are the same size. But in terms of how much light they give off, the sun is giving off far more light than the moon's reflection of the sun's light. So we get much more light from the sun than from the moon. So at the same time, they're both big, but also one is big and one is small. So that it may be a very simple approach. But the Medrash tells us something else. The Medrash tells us that when Hashem created both the sun and the moon, they were created the same size. And the moon came to Hashem and said, "Ein shnei malachim mishdamshem bekeser echad." Two kings cannot make use of the same crown. You can't have two people who are in two entities that are completely in charge. Now, we have successful partnerships. There are successful partnerships in business. There are successful partnerships in marriage. We have situations of successful partnerships. However, the way that successful partnerships work is when there is a very clear line of demarcation of whose authority is whose. When each of the partners understands what each of them has authority over, then partnerships work. When it's not understood, then everybody's constantly bumping into each other and stepping on each other's toes, then it doesn't work. So the sun and the moon came and said that you can't have two kings using the same crown. So Hashem said to the moon, L'chi umati es atzmeich, go and reduce yourself. You be the smaller of the two. So the moon said to Hashem, here I said something good. I brought to your attention something that's important. You're agreeing with me that two kings can't use the same crown. So just because I brought it up, therefore I need to reduce myself. What kind of a reward is that for having thought of something important? So Hashem said to the moon, okay, it's a good point. So I will placate you. You will be able to shine both during the night and during the day. The sun can only shine during the day. You can shine during the day also. As we know, the moon is often up during the day. The moon responded to Hashem, Shraga b'tiara lamali. Why does a person need a torch during the day? It's already very bright. You don't need the moon. I'm nothing during the day. Yeah, I may be up there, but I'm not providing anything for anybody during the day. My light is irrelevant during the day. So Hashem said, okay, you're right. I'll give you something else. You will be how time will be counted. All the Yom Tovim will be counted from Rosh Chodesh, from the moon. So you will be counted. You will be important for timekeeping. The moon said to Hashem, that's fine. But the sun also is part of timekeeping. Years are counted by the sun. Seasons are counted by the sun. So there's timekeeping with the sun also. Really, day is also counted with the sun. It's timekeeping is not just with me, it's also with the sun. So you haven't given me anything exclusive. So Hashem said, okay, you're right. But you should know that you are going to be like the tzaddikim. Because we find that Yaakov is called Hakatan, the small one. We find that David is called Hakatan, the small one. The tzaddikim all reduce themselves. There's a sense of humility that the tzaddikim have. And you will be like them. So the moon was still not placated. The moon was still unhappy with what Hashem told it to do. And therefore Hashem says to us, bring a sin offering on Rosh Chodesh, which is that Rosh Chodesh is the holiday of the moon. It's when the moon renews itself. Bring a sin offering for me that I made the moon reduce its size. That is the words of Chazal. This Gemara / Medrash opens up an entire Pandora's box of questions. First of all, the moon does not have free will. The moon would never argue with Hashem. It can't argue with Hashem, number one. Number two, Hashem does whatever he pleases. He can make the moon whatever he wants it to be. Why would he make it big and then tell it to reduce itself? Why does he tell it to reduce itself? Why didn't Hashem just reduce the moon? And what is this? Hashem says, since the moon is not being placated, therefore I need to have an atonement. Why does Hashem have to placate the moon? Hashem told the moon what to do. You do what you're told to do. You're a servant. Hashem is in charge. What is this business of having to placate the moon and not being able to placate the moon? It's a difficult medrash. Seems to be a nice medrash. It seems to one that has implications, but it is difficult to understand such a medrash. So how do we understand the medrash? So we've talked about things like this before, and we've explained that the midrashim like this are meant to bring out a point. They are not in any way saying that the moon or that has some sort of free will or the moon is able to talk. That rather it is bringing out a point for us to understand about ourselves and about how Hashem runs the world. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyah Bidvaro. We know that the moon is considered to be a symbol of the Jewish people, And particularly, it's a symbol of Malchus Beis David, of David HaMelech's line. The moon waxes and wanes, and we, and also David HaMelech, we wax and we wane in terms of how well we do and how much we affect the world, but we never completely go away. We are always there, we will always come back, and always become stronger. Even when we are waning, we will eventually wax again. The analogy of the moon to the Jewish people is found in many places. And we know that our calendar primarily counts with the moon. Not exclusively, we count with the sun also. But the moon is how we count our Yamim Tovim. And we are ultimately in charge of proclaiming the new month. That is our job, and we make it happen. There's even a question, how is it that months happen today? How do you have months with Rosh Chodesh when we do not have a Sanhedrin, a Beis Din anymore, that proclaims the new month? How does it work these days, that it just happens automatically with a set calendar? But the Torah says you have to proclaim the new month. There are different answers given to this question, but one of the answers is that the Beis Din of Hillel HaKatan, the one who put together the thousand-year calendar that we use right now, they proclaimed the Rosh Chodeshim, all of the Rosh Chodeshes, from their day for the future. Now, that is, when we have Rosh Chodesh today, it was already proclaimed back in the day of Hillel HaKatan. That's one approach to this, because it has to be proclaimed by the Jews. Hashem created the two big lights. He created the sun and the moon. Initially, they were the same size. Did they give off the same amount of light? I don't know. Let's say they did. That's not relevant, really. But whatever it is, the moon rivaled the sun in size, maybe even in brightness. We don't know. So Hashem, so the moon comes and says, it's not going to work. Can't have two authorities over the same domain. Hashem says, you're right. You should reduce yourself. Why didn't Hashem just reduce the moon? Why did he tell the moon, go and reduce yourself? This medrash is really a medrash that is bringing out the centrality of humility. It is bringing out how important it is for one to curb their arrogance and to emphasize humility. And the moon comes and says, this isn't going to work. It's not going to work, which is true. But Hashem wanted it to be brought to our attention. He could have initially just created the sun big and the moon small. He could have done that. But then we would never have had this exchange. And this exchange is meant to bring out a point that it is true that two authorities cannot coexist over this same thing. Who's going to notice that? Who is going to notice that two people were given authority over the same thing? Who's going to be the one to notice it and bring it to the attention of Hashem? Is it going to be the one who is predisposed to arrogance, or the one who is predisposed to humility? Who's going to notice, hey, we're going to be stepping on each other's toes all the time. We're going to be bumping into each other all the time. We're both in charge of the same domain. It's not going to work. The arrogant person isn't even going to notice that. The arrogant person will just simply set their sights and themselves to making sure to take what they believe is theirs and to muscle out the other threat to their domain. They're not going to say it's not going to work. They're just going to make it their business to be in charge. The one who's predisposed to humility will say, hey, this is not going to work. At least it's not going to work peacefully. I'm not interested in a fight. It's not going to work. So Hashem says, you noticed it. Then you should reduce yourself. Take the initiative and project humility. Be the humble one. Show the importance of humility. But the moon says, but I said something good. Why should I be the one to give up what I had? I pointed out something which is important and true. Hashem says, I'll placate you. I'll give you, you'll be able to shine during the day. I'll make it that the time is counted from you. You will be like the tzaddikim. But each time the moon is not placated. Because acting with true humility, real humility, giving up that which you really could have been yours, giving up something which it could have been mine just as much as it could have been his or just as much as it could have been hers, that's really hard to do. It's really difficult to do. When Rachel Imenu gives up to Leah, she gives up being the mother of Klal Yisrael. That's not a simple thing. It's a very difficult thing to do. She did it, but it was a very difficult thing to do. It's a self-sacrifice. It's hard to be really humble. If a person is finding humility easy, chances are they're not really being humble. They think they are, but they're not really, because humility is not easy. Humility means to give up something which you really could do just as well as the other person. You really, it could be yours. But humility says to give it up. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to give it up and give it up in a way that people are going to look at you and not know that you have that talent. Not know that you have that ability. People will never know. No one will ever know that the moon could have been the sun. No one will ever know. The moon is up, is just reflecting the light of the sun. That's all it's doing. No one thinks the moon could have been the sun. The moon is just this rock that's orbiting the earth, and it's compared to, nobody thinks that has anything to do with the sun. It's nothing compared to the sun. And no one ever knows, no one will ever know. It's very, very difficult to really, really be humble. And in the end, the moon is not placated, even when Hashem says you'll be like the tzaddikim, because this is the hallmark of the tzaddikim. David is makdin himself. He lowers himself. Yaakov is makdin himself. Yaakov lowers himself. The Jewish people lower themselves. That is a beautiful thing, but it's very, very difficult to do. So Hashem says in the end, bring a karban on Rosh Chodesh, to atone for the fact that I reduced the moon. Meaning, I want it to be noticed every Rosh Chodesh that the reason why the moon is small is because the moon is projecting humility. And I want you to notice that. I want you to see that. I even want you to offer a karban which will bring out the point that the moon really doesn't want to do this. The moon is doing it because I told it to. But it doesn't really want to do it because being humble is hard. And you should know, Hashem says, that when you act with humility, when you say that others don't have to know what I have, others don't have to know who I am, others don't have to know that I could have done it too, others don't have to know that I have that talent. Hashem knows, and that's good enough. Others don't have to know. It can be quiet, and no one has to know. When you do that, says Hashem, I notice, I know how difficult it is. I'm, so to speak, atoning for that, because I'm kind of pushing you in that direction. And that's hard to do. And ultimately, the reward will come from me. I will ultimately reward you. And as the Gemara tells us, then in the future Hashem will restore the greatness of the moon. But for now, the moon is projecting that crucial midah, that crucial characteristic of humility, which is the characteristic of David HaMelech and his line, and really should be our characteristic as well. And anybody who's ever been in a position where they know they could do it too, but they don't, and no one else knows about it, then you know how hard it is. Just think of a very, very simple case. A very simple case where you're in a public setting, whether it's a class or anything else. A question is asked that most people don't know the answer to, but you do know the answer to it. But someone else does too, and the other person gives the answer, and no one knew that of the 100 people in the room, only 2 people knew the answer, and you were one of them. All the people know is that only one person knew the answer, and that person was the one. And there's a drive inside of us that I want everyone else to know that I also knew the answer. I also did. It wasn't just that person. There's that drive inside of us. It's a natural drive. It's not even a bad drive. It's not an evil. It's a natural drive that I want people to know it. But it's not humility. Humility is no one will ever know. I knew it. Hashem knows that I knew it. And that's good enough. And no one else has to know. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. Now that's a Kleinika. That's a nothing case. That's not important. But there, we all have experienced it. We know what that's like. And on a larger scale, it's very, very difficult to do. This brings us to the paragraph of Pesach. Since this is our last class before Pesach, it's a shame to stop right here. And we have a few more minutes. So I'd like to read this paragraph, although it's likely we're going to have to continue after Pesach with some of the points we're not going to finish tonight. But let's at least read this paragraph, and at least let's point out how much of this is read on Pesach. If we read the Rosh Chodesh paragraph on Rosh Chodesh, so it stands to reason we're going to read the Pesach paragraph on Pesach, which is true. So the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Tezayin verse 16, Uvachodesh harishon, and in the first month, which is Nisan, be'arba'a asar yom lachodesh, on the 14th day of the month. Now the 14th day of the month is not yet Pesach. On the 14th day of the month, Pesach laHashem, we bring the Karban Pesach to Hashem. That is not on the 14th day of the month. It is not, when it says here Pesach, it doesn't mean the holiday. It means the Karban. The Karban Pesach is run on the 14th. And as an aside, we know that the Karban Pesach is Doche Shabbos. It is brought even on Shabbos. This year, when Erev Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, is Shabbos, if we would have a Beis HaMikdash, the Karban Pesach would be brought on Shabbos itself. We would all be there in Yerushalayim, and it would be brought on Pesach. It's not eaten until the nighttime at the Seder, but on Shabbos itself is when the Karban is processed. Pasuk Yud Zayin verse 17. Uvachamisha asar yom lachodesh hazeh chag. And on the 15th day of this month is a chag. Chag can mean 2 things. Chag can mean holiday. We use it that way as a chag. But it can also mean to offer a karban chagiga. Karban chagiga is this special offering that is brought on a holiday. And on Pesach, we have to offer a special carbon called the Chagiga. That's an individual carbon that is brought by each family. So we bring a carbon Chagiga on the holiday. Shivas yomim matzos ye'achel. For 7 days, matzos are eaten. It doesn't say you must eat matzah for 7 days, because there is only a requirement to eat matzah on the first day, and in Chutz La'aretz on the first 2 days. Really, the first night and the first 2 nights. There's no requirement to eat matzah the rest of Pesach, but you can't eat chametz. So if you want to have a bread substance, you have to have matzah. But the requirement is only on the first night. So here it says 7 days matzah shall be eaten, not you shall eat matzah. Pasuk Yud Ches verse 18, Bayom Arishon Mikra Kodesh, the first day is Mikra Kodesh, which means that it is a holiday in the sense that we don't work. Komaleches avoda lo sasu, all types of work that is avoda, that is to perform work, should not be done. You're not allowed to do work on the first day of Pesach. You are allowed to cook, but you're not allowed to do other types of work on the first day of Pesach. what karbanos are brought. V'ikraftem yishel olah la'Hashem, bring a fire offering, a burnt offering to Hashem. What do you bring? We're going to have the same formula that we had on Rosh Chodesh. Parim b'nei bakar shnayim, two bulls, v'ayel echad and one ram, v'shiva kevasim b'nei shana, and one year old sheep, timimim, that are without blemish, yulachem, should be for you. Umin chasam, and their meal offerings are the same as Rosh Chodesh. Soles bilulav ha-shamen, they're going to be fine flour mixed with oil. Shlosha esronim la-paru, shnei esronim la-ayel ta-asu, three esronim for each bull, two esronim for each ram you shall do. Isaron, isaron ta-asa la-keves ha-echad, one isaron you should do for each of the sheep. L'shivas ha-kvasim, for the seven sheep. And usir chatas echad l'chaper lechem, and one goat as a sin offering to atone for yourselves. Milvad olas haboker. This is in addition to the ola of the morning, the carbon tamid. Asher leolas hatamid, which is the ola of the tamid, the consistent ola. Tazu es eile, you should do these. So these 11 karbanos should be done in addition to the carbon tamid. Ka'ele tazu layom shivas yamim. Like these, you should do each day for 7 days. These 11 additional karbanos should be brought every day of Pesach for 7 days. Lechem ishere achnicha ach laHashem. It is lechem. Lechem literally means bread, but it really means that which is consumed as a fire offering and a pleasant smell for Hashem, so to speak. Alolas ha-tamid ye'aseh. It should be done in addition to or after the ola of the morning, the ola of the tamid, v'nisko, and its libations. And finally, uvayom ha-shvi'i, on the 7th day of Pesach, mikra kodesh ye'lachem. It shall also be a holiday for you. Kol melechas avodah lo sa'asu. Don't do any malacha. Don't do any extra work other than cooking, cannot be done on the last day. So the first day of the 7 days and the last day of the 7 days are a Yom Tov. The middle days are not. Now the Torah doesn't say what they are. We know we call them Chol Hamoed. They are part of Pesach. We offer the same Musaf Karbanos on all 7 days. The second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth days of Pesach are the exact same musaf as the first and seventh days of Pesach. Same exact musaf. And you can't eat chametz, you eat matzah. But they're not mikra kodesh, they don't have the same level of stringency. We do work on those middle 6 days. Which, of course, brings up the question of which work can be done on the middle 6 days and which work cannot be done on the middle 6 days. I say 6 days. It's really 5 days. I keep saying six because it's one in the beginning, one in the end out of 7 days. So it's the middle 5 days, excuse me. So what work can be done in those middle 5 days on Chol Hamoed? That, of course, is not clear in the Torah what is and is not allowed during Chol Hamoed. The karbanos of Pesach are the same every single day. This is why we don't say the full Hallel after the first day of Pesach. Now, when I say first day, of course, in the Chutzlarts, it's 2 days. But after the first day or 2 days of Pesach, we only say what is called half Hallel, which means we skip some paragraphs in Hallel. Why? Because the karbanos are the same every day. They don't change. On Sukkot, which we'll get to later on in Parashas Pinchas, there the karbanos change every day. Since the karbanos change every day, therefore it's a new Hallel every day. But Pesach is redundant. Therefore, it does not get a full Hallel. Even the last day of Pesach, which is a Yom Tov, still, it does not get a full Hallel. It only gets a partial Hallel because of the fact that it's the same karbanos over and over and over again. Now, you can then take the question one step further, which is, why are the karbanos the same every day? And on Sukkot, they change. So that's a little bit more complex, which perhaps we'll deal with when we get to Sukkot. We'll see if we get to that discussion. But the on Pesach, it's all the same. On the first day of Pesach, and in Chutzlar, the first 2 days of Pesach, the mafter of the reading of the first day or 2 days of Pesach is this paragraph. You read this entire paragraph, as the mafter of the Kriyas HaTorah for Pesach. Once you get past the first day, or the first 2 days in Chutz Laretz, then you don't start from the beginning of the paragraph, you start from Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19. V'hi kraftem ishe ola laHashem, you shall offer a burnt offering to Hashem. Because the offering is the same. It's the same karbonos. But we're not going to read about the Yom Tov, because the Yom Tov is already over. The meaning, the first day is already finished. So we're not going to read about the 15th of Nisan once we get to the 16th of Nisan, or in Chutz Laretz, the 17th of Nisan. So we start from V'hi kraftem, which is Pasuk Yud Tes, verse 19, and we go to the end of the paragraph. And that's the reading, that's the mafter every day, or the, I should say, the second reading every day for Pesach, once you get past the first day of Pesach. We'll mention one last point. Let's just address this Chol HaMoed question. The Torah never tells us exactly what is permitted and what is prohibited on Chol HaMoed. We know that not everything is prohibited, because the Torah clearly demarcates Chol HaMoed from the first and last days of Pesach. Clearly they're different. But on the other hand, it's not a regular day either. It's not a regular weekday. It's part of Pesach. So there is something that's going to be prohibited. So Chazal tell us that the Torah left it open to our sages, to Chazal, to draw the line of what is permitted and what is not permitted. We don't have the time, and really this is not the forum, to get into all the details, but I will give you at least the basic breakdown of Chol HaMoed, is that...
Some people don't write.
Yeah, some people don't write on Chol HaMoed, that's true. Some people don't go to work on Chol HaMoed, if they can. If a person is able not to go to work on Chol HaMoed, that's a good thing, not to go to work on Chol HaMoed. But we recognize that it's not always so simple. Their job could be in jeopardy, and a person could lose a lot of money. So we don't, but it depends on the type of job a person has. It is meritorious not to work on Chol HaMoed. But what of the Lamed Tes Malachos, what is prohibited, what is permitted? And the answer to that is, at least as a basic thing, at least the baseline, is that which is a Dover Ha'avid, that which, if it isn't done, there'll be a loss of money, is permitted. Again, if it's not done, there'll be a loss of money. So let's say a person has a leak in their roof, and now it may rain, or they may damage their home. Then that may be fixed on Chol HaMoed, even though it requires malacha. They can fix it themselves, if they know how. Even though it requires all kinds of work, that would be okay, because it's a davar ha'avid, there's going to be a loss of money. That's one type of category that is permitted on Chol HaMoed. Another type of category that's permitted on Chol HaMoed is when it's needed for the Yom Tov. So you can go shopping on Chol HaMoed for what you need for Yom Tov, because you need it for Yom Tov. Things that are required for Yom Tov, or are part of the simcha, the happiness of Yom Tov. People go on trips. They go on Chol HaMoed trips. Now sometimes they're not so happy, but when they work out, so Chol HaMoed trips, it's part of what we do, right? So that's part of the Yom Tov. It's part of the happiness of the Yom Tov. So Chol HaMoed, not everything is permitted for this reason, but many things are permitted because they are for the Yom Tov. So those are two broad categories. One is to prevent the loss of money. One is needed for the Yom Tov, that permit many types of things to be done. But the rules are complex and not so simple. If you are not clear about whether something is permitted or not, you should ask. And typically, I encourage people that if it's something that, you know, everybody does it and you've been doing it for years, it's probably fine. But if it's a new type of thing, you've never done it before, you might want to ask before doing it. So just going to give you an example of something which would be worth asking a question about. People want to go fruit picking, apple picking, or something like that. Not so simple, because picking an apple off of a tree is an outright malacha. That's a Torah malacha on Shabbos. You can't do that. Yom Tov, you can't do that. Could you do it on Chol HaMoed? Not such a simple thing. So that type of thing should be asked before one does that. And you think, well, it's a beautiful Chol HaMoed trip, but it might not be permitted because you're actually doing a malacha of pulling the fruit of the tree. So what if you're using the fruit for Yom Tov? Right, so that's what I'm saying. You have to ask. Most of the time, when those things are done, when they is a lot more that's picked than just for the Yom Tov. Right? So it's not such a simple thing. So one should ask before doing something like that on Chol HaMoed. So that's what I mean. Yeah. Things like this. You go to pottery making. You know, you're painting. Painting is a malacha. Right? So these things should be asked rather than just to assume that everything is okay. Whereas going on a trip, like going to a park or something like that, there's no malacha involved other than the driving, and that is, we know that, I mean, everybody drives on Chol HaMoed, so we don't need to be asking about something like that. But once you're involving other types of malachos, one should really ask before doing it.
Rabbi Kamansky?
Yes.
I didn't understand your explanation about the moon, because if the moon was sincerely humble, I didn't understand why it needed to be placated. Why did it have to keep going over and over, you know, why this and why that with Hashem? If he really just was going to accept that he could do it, but the son is going to do it because that's what Hashem decided. One, we can't both be there, so I'll be here. Why was he still asking Hashem for things if he was doing it because he was really sincere?
Excellent.
Why did it have to go on and on and on?
Right, excellent. So I think what is being brought out is that even the one who is trying to be humble, it's a very difficult thing to do. And I think that's what the Medrash is trying to teach us. That if we are trying to be humble and we're struggling with it, don't be discouraged. It's hard to be humble. And the moon is our example of humility, and look how difficult it was. And it's gonna be hard to do.
So Hashem is helping the moon by bringing that sin offering for himself, showing the moon that it's so difficult.
That's right.
And so Hashem.
That's right. That's the way I'm understanding it.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody have a very good Yom Tov.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.